So we're going to open the Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development. We have a number of bills, as this is the last committee meeting before we have to move over to House bills. So with that, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1555. Senator Gerard, you want to come up, and we'll have Beth give a short explanation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1555 has a -1 amendment that should be in your packet. The bill would cap the amount of bonds or other securities required bidders or purchasers in connection with forest product sales by the state forester. There is, check my cheat sheet here, there's a minimal fiscal impact on the -1 and no revenue impact.
Okay, with that, thank you for being here, Senator Gerard.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, this is a very simple bill. It's a very small bill. It's a
for the record.
I'm Senator Fred Gerard, Senate District 9. The timber industry, as you well know, is kind of hurting. And what we've decided to do is to see what we could come up with the state forester in order to help timber sales and to help the timber industry. We wanted to make sure that it helped. It was also beneficial to the state. And we had a whole menagerie of ideas, and it was a lot like herding cats, I got to tell you. And to come up with continuity, I thought maybe oral bids would be better than sealed bids. Yeah, some people liked it, some people didn't like it. Anyway, to make a long story short, what we came up to is a very small change, and that change is to the cap rate required for an insurance policy for the timber industry when they do a bid on a sale. And this would reduce that cap rate. And by doing that, it also would be beneficial to the timber industry, but it would also be beneficial to the state in the sense that the projection would be that then the bid would increase. So it's beneficial to everybody. I'm going to let Jen come up here and talk a little bit about it. There is a -1, which takes away some language that we decided that we couldn't do for constitutional reasons. And like I said, it's a very small change, but I think it would be significant and worth doing. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jen would like to come up, and then I think
Chris
State Forester is here, and OFIC is here as well.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Jenny. Come on up, and bring your team.
Chairwoman, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Dressler, and I'm a policy analyst with the Senate Republican Office. I'm here today representing a constituent of Senator Gerard, and Senator Gerard, who suggested this concept based on his experience engaging in both federal and state timber sales. I believe that the proposal in front of you would benefit not only the industry, but it would benefit many communities across Oregon. As amended by the -1 amendment that you all see in front of you, this bill would cap timber sale performance bonds at $500,000, which is the amount that U.S. BLM timber sale bonds are capped at. Currently, Oregon timber sale bonds can exceed $1 million, tying up capital for up to 6 months or 180 days, as is in our statute. Companies that bid on timber sales typically incorporate the cost of the bond into their bid amount, which would actually likely result in less money that they're willing to put into the bid. We have a sealed bid process for our timber sales, so nobody knows how much that they're bidding, but they're incorporating the cost of the bond, which is going to be held for that period of time, into their bid. And this is money that is essentially out of the state's pocket, money that goes towards the Common School Fund and goes to payments to counties. So I was doing some research on this, and I found that other states, neighboring states, have bonds actually much lower than the $500,000 that we're even proposing in Senate Bill 1555. Washington, for instance, has a $100,000 cap. In Idaho, when I spoke to their state timber sale expert, we went through all their data, and they didn't have anything close to a $500,000 cap, which may reflect the size of their timber sales, but I thought it was interesting. So in closing, I urge the committee to pass Senate Bill 1555, with including the dash one amendment. I think it would benefit a lot of communities across Oregon, and it has bipartisan support, as you'll see when you look at that bill. So.
Mr. Chair, members, Chris Jarmer, Oregon Forest Industries Council. I'd like to register our support for the bill as amended as well. And I'm mainly here to answer any questions you might have about the technical aspects of what this is doing or what it might do from the purchaser's standpoint. So thanks to Senator Girard for bringing it forward. Thank you for hearing it, and want to just register our support.
Thanks. Chair Roebland, members of the committee, I'm Mike Bordelon. I'm the Division Chief for State Forest with the Oregon Department of Forestry. We've worked pretty closely with Senator Girard and Jenny in terms of formulating this bill, and we've looked at it pretty carefully. We believe that this bill is workable for the agency. As Jenny said, it has three components. One is a cap on performance bonds for state timber sales. When we look at our state timber sales and we see which ones are above the $500,000 cap using our current methodology, we have 80% that fall below the $500,000 and 20% that fall above. So the 20% above represents some potential risk here, but when we also look at the default rate on timber sales, that default rate is extremely low. We're talking about 1% to 2% over the last 5 years. So we think this is an acceptable level of risk that we can take. And as noted by Senator Girard and by Jenny, by reducing the cost to the purchasers for performance bonds, this enables purchasers to potentially bid a little bit higher on some of our timber sales. So I think there's a benefit to the state. The original bill, as proposed, had a 90-day time period that we held those performance bonds. The amendment moves that to 180 days, and our current process and procedure, which aligns with another ORS, is 180 days, so that's that aligned with what we think we need here. So in that concept, we're in support of the bill.
Any questions
for the group?
Yeah. So with regard to the bond, it's really in case the people walk away from the sale. Well, where would it ever come into effect? When would we ever say, okay, we're going to take the bond and use it? If State Forest otherwise, I guess, would be best.
Chair Roble, if you don't mind, I'll start and chime in. Where this comes into play is for us is when we have a default on a timber sale, sort of an official default, meaning that the purchaser could not fulfill the terms of the contract. Okay. And at that point, then, we have the performance bond in place to ensure that we receive payment for the timber that has been removed during a time period, okay? Okay. So that's the basic coverage here, is to make sure that we can receive the appropriate level of revenue for that timber. We turn around after that default, and as I said, the defaults are very rare. We resell the timber.
Okay.
If we resell the timber at a lower price, there's a differential. And that differential could also be covered by the performance bond. So that's really the purpose of it.
That helps me understand. From that perspective, we've got 20% that we've had of some risk at.
Right.
But we would actually be able to resell and do whatever is there. So we probably could regroup. Okay. That makes me feel more likely to think that that's an appropriate thing. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Those were the only people who were signed up. Is there anybody else in the room who wants to speak to Senate Bill 1555? I see no one. So we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 1555. I'm feeling pretty comfortable with this bill, so I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1555. Senator Bearsugar.
Chair Roebland, I move to adopt. Do we have dash ones?
Yes, we do. They're the ones that go back 180
right.
days.
Right, yep, okay. Chair Roebland, I move to adopt the dash one amendment stated 2414.
Senator Bearsugar moves to adopt the dash one amendment stated 2414. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition? Seeing none. They are adopted.
Okay.
Senator Bearsugar.
Chair Roebland, I move Senate Bill 1555 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Bearsugar moves Senate Bill 1555. As amended, to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, it passes. Senator Girard, would he wish to carry? Okay, we'll give it to Senator Girard. And with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1555. And we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1575. And with that, we'll have a short explanation. And who should we call first?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1575 would establish the permanent or temporary facility for utilizing raw logs as an outright permitted use of land zoned for forest use or mixed farm and forest use. There are both a dash one and a dash two amendment in front of you in your packet.
Okay, with that, Dave Honeycutt and Mark, Fritch, that's right. I thought. Is Dave here? Is he going to come?
Yes, Dallas.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
And is Senator Thompson?
Oh, he's next door.
Okay,
he's,
he probably went to get him.
Okay. I have no packet.
Sorry about that. Pardon?
I don't have a packet.
No packet.
Oh. I thought Herman took two of them.
No?
He says he did.
I got plenty of paperwork. I don't need any more.
I have that one, and I can take whatever she brings to me. Okay.
We'll see. We'll give a moment. We'll sit at ease for a second while we wait for the good senator to come. That Senator,
thank you, Chair Roper.
Sorry, we got going before you got here. So,
I don't know, just barely. We stopped
before.
Thanks, thank you, and the rest of the committee. Thanks for having me. I'm Chuck Thompson, Senate District 26. I met Mr. Fritch last summer sometime. He's got quite the operation. He's a builder of. And it's kind of a, well, I'm not going to say a lost art anymore, but it's quite an art form, really. He's a home builder of custom log homes. And in I went over and visited his site up in the area of the Brightwood over near Welch's. And it was an amazing site. I think he's got, he runs a small operation where they have, I believe, five employees.
Myself and three.
Okay. And I'm not going to tell the whole story because he knows a lot better than I do, but he's able to have a sawmill according to the statutes and the county codes. He can notch his logs. He can shape them. He can debark them, do everything, but build the home. And just picture when we were all kids, we had the Lincoln log set where you build the logs all the way up. He's not allowed to do that process. And with that, without that, he's not able to do what he's doing at his current site. So with that, I have another committee meeting, and I will go back to that, but I wanted to be here to introduce Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks for hearing this. Thank you.
Senator Roebling, committee members, thank you for allowing me to testify today. I wish to go ahead. I wanted to start this with a few slides because it kind of it'll show a little bit better what we do if we can have it up on the screen, if we could.
Oh, yeah, and you mean to make sure you give us your name.
Oh, excuse me. My name is Mark Fritch.
Thanks.
I live in Sandy, Oregon. Let's see. Is this going to let us go up? There we go.
Mr. Fritch, you don't need to be that close to the mic. It's very sensitive.
That's true. Oh. It's better if you're away from it.
Yeah.
I've had a bit of hearing loss, and I couldn't hear some of you earlier, so I thought I had to. Thank you. We're located right at the very base of Mount Hood, 12 miles east of Sandy, Oregon. I've been in this area for building handcrafted log homes for the last 24 years. I've been building handcrafted log homes for 44 years now. And we purchase our timber locally from various landowners. And the nice part about having our location in a rural environment is it puts me near my resources so I can cut down hauling costs, and it cuts down transportation both to and from our jobs and also for our employees. Who the young men that work for me are typically outdoor-oriented and rural people. We manage our stands of timber. I'm a forester by training, and I've worked in every aspect. My family has a sawmill, so I've been in, this is my life, is forest industries, manufacturing, harvesting, and construction with logs. We bring the logs into our yard where they're loaded, or unloaded rather. We have the, this is a picture of my old work site where I was located for 21 years, which is 2 miles east of Sandy. This was a former plywood veneer plant, and I was there for 21 years. At one point, there was a dispute, and someone thought that it was a misuse of the site. This site was zoned timber resource. I had my business there, and in the large building behind, there were two cabinet shops. Clackamas County came in at the time. I never spoke with anyone from the county. They required the two cabinet shops to leave the area because they determined those to be secondary processors. They never told me I had to leave, never gave me any parameters, and never even asked me to apply for a conditional use permit. And I remained there. That happened in 1996, and I was there until about 3 years ago when this property was sold and the new property owner gave me 3 months to vacate. This, like I said, this was zoned timber resource. What we do is we bring our logs in full length. We hire a lot of young people, for the most part, to hand peel all of these. There's very little noise made when they're peeling, but we do pack a lot of lunches. At the work site, once the logs are peeled, we then have to pre-assemble the log work package so that we can scribe, cut, and fit each log as we add it to this building materials package. The building is then tagged, disassembled, and loaded out. In a day's time, in an 8-hour shift, we may be operating power saws for about 2 hours a day, but not every day. And a lot of times, we're not even on the site because we're gone reassembling the buildings. A lot of our tools are electric tools, which are quieter than the chainsaws. We work in all kinds of weather. Sometimes it's not comfortable, but we keep working anyhow. The logs are loaded on trucks. They're shipped out. This particular load was one of six loads that we shipped all the way to Virginia, 2,900 miles away. This is a job that we did ourselves in Tollgate, Oregon, where I trucked them myself. We built a visitor center there. This is in Kaiser. We do everything from small structures to large structures. This is in Hood River. We build a recreation of Lewis and Clark's Fort Clatsop for the Boy Scouts at Camp Merriweather. This is the largest house we ever built. This also went to Virginia 4 years ago. It was a 7,900-square-foot handcrafted log home. Lake Billy Chinook, Hood River again. This is down by Mary's Peak. Again, this is a job in Tollgate. We've worked for the Oregon Department of Forestry building interpretive facilities and shelters. We build a number of small homes in Clackamas County. These are all homes that we built. I did all the design and log work for, and some of them I general contracted as well. One of the things about these houses, they're very highly regarded. They create a lot of tax base for the counties where they're located. We not only do that, but one of the things that we provide is we do restoration work on historic log structures. This is a building that was built in 1946 in Sandy. We do additions on log buildings. This was a 3,500-square-foot addition. It's a multi-million-dollar project. It was amazing. We had to leave our former site, and I moved to this site, a five-acre site located on Marmot Road, 12 miles east of Sandy. It's zoned timber resource, and from the late 30s until 1959, when the Cook family bought it, this was a logging truck, parking, maintenance, repair facility. So this is historically was a timber industry resource site. Before I moved to the site, I contacted Clackamas County, asked them if they still felt that I qualified for timber resource zoning. They said yes. I started the conditional use process, then negotiated the terms of the lease purchase option that we're in right now, and I had to begin moving because I had someone pushing me out of my former site. So we moved in here. It wasn't what I wanted to do. I would have been very happy to stay where I was. But we don't know what the future holds. This is John Steiner. He died about a year ago at the age of 99. He and his father built over 80 log homes in the Mount Hood area, a number of which are now in the National Historic Register. They never thought that would happen. But John asked me to do the repair work on his home before he died, and I promised John that if I could, I would see that his houses were taken care of. We do log accent work. This is the last project that we shipped out to Virginia. We've also done one in government camp since this. But these provide a lot of revenue for myself and my three employees. And I have other staff, not to mention the materials, people, the sub-trades, and so forth. So I've been doing this a lot of years, and I would really like to continue that. I'd like to stop right there and see if there are any questions that that brought up before I move forward a bit more.
Yeah, we can do any questions right now?
Yeah.
Yes, Senator Fisher.
So have you tried any other means of resolution, you know, to resolve this besides going to the legislature?
Yes. Well, we filed for the conditional use permit hearing, and I lost there. But while that, before we even got to the hearing, I realized that there was a lot of upset with a few of the members or neighbors near me. Not all the neighbors. There are a lot of neighbors for whom they really like what I'm doing. So I was told that Clackamas County Judicial or Family Law System has a free mediation service, and it's designed exactly for community disputes, this type of thing. I contacted them, set up a mediation. They asked me to send the names and contact information for all the people that I felt might be upset or opposed, which I did. Clackamas County called me back about a week later and said that every single person declined to mediate, and she said that basically the tenor of it was we're not going to mediate unless we don't get what we want, and then we'll mediate. So I did that, and then I pursued by the numbers, you know, through the hearing, LUBA Court of Appeals.
Have you done anything to, obviously the neighbors are upset about something.
Yes.
Have you done anything to alleviate that if you're disturbing the neighbors? Have you made any accommodations for them?
Well, one of the things that we've done is, even though in the summertime, we try to start early in the morning, we start at 6 or even 7, but we never begin our outside operation. We don't start any heavy equipment or chainsaws until at least 8 o'clock. I took out I secured a loan with the Mount Hood Economic Alliance for $150,000. I applied for $50,000, and they gave me $150,000 because they liked what I was doing, and it allowed me to buy an electric tower crane. So I don't have to use my diesel-powered cranes almost ever on the site at this point. We use this electric tower crane. I purchased a new machine to move logs with. It's a smaller, quieter machine, and I just purchased 5 new Husqvarna state-of-the-art chainsaws that are much, much quieter and pollute far less than the saws that, you know, we've used for years. So I've, you know, I'm trying everything I can do to make it work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Then you can continue with the testimony.
Okay. We went through the Clackamas County process, And one of the things about that I feel might be inaccurate in the way this bill is being represented is that it establishes uses on forest land, when in fact my intention, what I tried to achieve and I think did achieve, is this doesn't allow any new uses. State law since 1975 has allowed, they fleshed out the laws a little bit in Clackamas County as of July 1st, 2013, but prior to that, there were essentially four things you could do on timber ground. You could grow trees, you could have a house if it fit a template or was grandfathered in, and with a conditional use permit, you could have a logging shop, or with a conditional use permit, you could have a permanent facility for the primary processing of forest products. You had to have a conditional use permit for those two. And it's rigorous. I mean, the county could have said, no, you can't meet that. We had traffic studies. We had sound studies done. We're way low on our sound. The Sandy River right now is putting out about 57 decibels, and the sound limit with DEQ is 55, you know, 30 minutes an hour. You know, so the river's louder than we put out during our operations. We had a professional audio engineer check it out. We put out, I think it was 47 to 49 decibels throughout the day. We did a 24-hour study, two 24-hour studies. Then we did a 24-hour weekend study where we weren't there. And we found that the weekend study, I believe it was, produced 45 to 46 decibels, just ambient noise, traffic noise, and so forth. So, and we also, I didn't want to move the our general work area to the back of the property because it was planted in timber, and I'm a forester. I like trees. I didn't want to have to uproot these trees that had just been replanted after they harvested the timber prior to my purchase. But we also did sound studies that if I move all of my equipment to the bench on the back of the property, it doesn't even register on the sound studies that were taken near the homes of two of the people that are in opposition that live across from the southwest corner and the northwest corner of the property. So it works out fairly well in that regard. You know, this is the and the reason when we had our hearing, the biggest problem that we had was I was told that we had to have a sound study done, and I didn't hear that until 6 days before the hearing, so I couldn't get it completed prior to the hearing. They held the hearing record open, and I was told that they were waiting for the sound study. I didn't stress. I said I was a primary processor of forest products. I gave my history when I testified. Clackamas County's planning department came out because the law says you can have a primary processing facility, but there's no definition of that term. And without a definition, for over 38 years, that law has been on the books, and they've been putting primary processing facilities, some are on forest land, some are industrial land, rural industrial if it's out there. They've been establishing forest products processing facilities, but it never came up. When we got a bad call, I felt it was because there was no definition, and the hearings officer that I had looked at it and goes, well, there's no definition, there's no case law, so I get to define it. And he defined primary processing, but he only defined primary, and he didn't define process. Process is a series of steps. So by virtue of that, he defined primary, and he said, okay, the primary thing that Mark Fritsch does is peels logs. He can peel those. Well, they decided that I could cut them, but they said I can't stack them up. The stacking of it is a critical step in my process because I can't mark the next log to cut it. We're not building a house. This is not a mobile home. It's not a modular structure. It's not a lot different than a sawmill, and that's how Clackamas County's planning staff determined that I was a processor. The only activity by name that's mentioned in the law is sawmills. You can have that facility, but the only one by name is sawmill. So they looked at what we do versus a sawmill, and we both bring logs in, we both peel them, we both cut, fit, shape, process, stack them up, load them on trucks to ship them out where they're used, either in secondary processing or directly into a home. So we create a building material. It's a final forest product from raw logs. We just use a lot of hand tools, and part of our process, we have to put the log in place to make the next cut. And so we're not building houses. We're pre-assembling them so that we can cut the individual pieces. And they've said that I can do all of those steps. And at the LUBA hearing, they also said that it would be a possibility on this zoning for me to have a home-based business. So if there was a question of whether the fact that I design the homes myself, you know, I can do that in my home. I don't engineer them. I'm not an engineer. The other thing that I see is there are just so many, how would I say it? This has worked for 38 years. First case law, what was missing was a definition. And I think that if you really get a definition, that would be important. Recently, there was another hearing, same county, also 12 miles away from Sandy, where the a fellow had been turned in for not having a conditional use permit, and that's for Chuck Vance. Chuck is here today and said he would like to testify. I assisted Chuck in his case because I found out the hard way that if you don't literally put every bit of evidence you think you're ever going to need all the way to the state Supreme Court, if you don't take that in and submit it into that original land use hearing, you're hurting.
Yeah, we have a lot of people that want
to
testify.
So let me wrap it up. In Chuck Vance's final order, Ken Helm, I went to that hearing. Ken Helm said, look, I find you to be a primary processor, you know, unless an act of God occurs, you get to go from here today knowing you're going to get your conditional use. In his final order, when it came out, Ken Helm was the same hearings officer that I had, same county, same general location, same basic circumstances. He said he needed to address my testimony. He said in his testimony that this is a quasi-judicial environment. This is not the place to resolve this. People do not like it when judges legislate from the bench. What you need to do is find a legislative resolution to this. And he underlined the word legislative. He said you need to go to the county commissioners, LCDC, and I had already started this process. He, the same hearings officer, said, look, you need to fix this. Go do it. This is where you do it. That's what has me here today.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Honeycutt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here in support of SB 1575. I'll be brief because I know there's folks that want to testify. In farm zones and EFU zones, the legislature has a statute, actually two statutes, one for Layton and Washington County and the other for the other 34 counties, that very clearly prescribe the uses that can be made in farm zones. That type of statute is not available, or it does not exist, for forest zones. So the uses prescribed for forest zones are predominantly left to LCDC to define through administrative rule. As Mr. Fritch indicated, one of the uses that LCDC allows in the forest zone through their administrative rule is a temporary or permanent facility for the primary processing of a forest product. Unfortunately, the commission in their rulemaking has not defined what constitutes primary processing, and they haven't defined forest products. So it's a fairly vague rule that is left. If the legislature hasn't defined it and the agency hasn't defined it, then you're left, the counties are left to trying to define it on their own, and then that also gets then the courts have to attempt to try and divine what LCDC intended through case law. And so that's not a good way for those of us that are members of the Oregon State Bar. That's not a good way to operate. If the legislature or an agency wants to allow a use, then they need to be careful in how they define it and do it precisely so that the judges don't have to guess. Unfortunately, we don't have that, and as Mr. Fritch indicated, the Clackamas County Hearings Officer, Mr. Helm, urged in an opinion when he was trying to interpret this law that the legislature ought to take a whack at trying to put some sideboards and define what primary processing and forest products is. That's the intent of Senate Bill 1575. Essentially, the bill would allow a property owner to site a temporary or permanent facility to process the different forest products that we list in the bill The key is that the process has to start with a raw log. So we're talking about a business that would create a facility to process raw logs. That's essentially what the bill provides. And from there, then they can make it, they can convert those raw logs into forest products or into other type of end-use wood products. It's a fairly broad definition. I recognize that, but the goal wasn't to just to solve Mr. Fritch's issue. The goal was to provide some help for counties across the state that are struggling economically, and counties where some type of mill or other type of use that would process raw logs would be met with open arms. You know, we continually talk in this building about the need to help rural Oregon, and yet when it comes time to moving bills that would help rural Oregon, they sort of fall by the wayside. And so a bill like this was drafted not just to resolve Mr. Fritch's problem, but also to allow counties across the state, especially those counties that are hurting and struggling economically, to make it easier for them to put the actual processing facilities near the product that they're going to process, which is essentially the same way it's done right now in a farm zone. And so that's the goal of the language of the bill. We had amendments that we had prepared for the bill. Unfortunately, we got a note from Ledge Council saying that the amendments didn't fit within that pesky relating clause. The amendments would have narrowed the bill significantly and really more technically addressed Mr. Fritch's problem, with the idea that we could come back in a subsequent session and address, when we have more time, and address the remaining issues. But as I said, unfortunately, Ledge Council was of the opinion that the proposed amendments were outside the scope of the relating clause, and so we can't bring those amendments in. That being the case, we'd certainly commend this bill for your consideration and hopefully for your approval. If not, this is an issue that we hope to bring back, because there really is a need. When you have a rule that counties have a hard time interpreting and understanding, and the property owner has a hard time understanding it, and the neighbors have a hard time understanding it, it leads to chaos. And so we're hopeful that the legislature will step in, as you did years ago in farm zones, and help us out a little bit and give us some guidance as to what folks like Mr. Fritch can do, who are performing what I consider to be a valuable service and employing people in Clackamas County at a job that obviously has produced, what, at least from that slideshow, very impressive results.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we'll kind of go back and forth. So I'm going to ask Roger Kay and Lon Welsh to come on up next. I'll try to encourage you to keep your testimony shorter, so we have probably 20 people that want to testify. So,
good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. My name is Roger Kay. I represent Friends of Marion County. I submitted written testimony that you might have received already and might have a chance to review. I don't want to read my testimony, but basically it points to the fact that this bill uses the word treat in a portion of it. I'm not sure what line that is. I don't have a copy of the bill in front of me. But when we talk about treat or treatment, we're talking about chemical treatment of logs to preserve them from fungal and insect damage. We all know what pressure-treated logs look like, creosote-treated road ties, and other things. And my testimony points to at least a half a dozen chemicals that are used in the industry to treat logs against attack by insects and fungal organisms. And if any of you remember the Vietnam War and PCBs and pentachlorophenol, which is an item which is still in use. Some of these items have portions. They're not large portions, but they're determinant portions of these chemicals that are harmful to fish, wildlife, and humans. So that's the main point I want to make, that the bill talks about treat, and that's something that should not occur on a farm or forest land, because that's actually an industrial process that you'd see in an enclosed building, a concrete enclosed building with features that are provide fire and safety protection. And most of these chemicals are dissolved in solvents that are usually highly flammable. So that's why we oppose this bill, and that's my testimony. And the other thing is, when we're allowing processing of industrial facilities actually on farm or forest land, we're removing that portion of the land available for timber growth. So there is no restriction on the size of the building that can be used for processing, and it's going to remove a valuable timber harvest land on that site. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Lon Welsh. I live on Marmot Road in Sandy, Oregon, and I am testifying in opposition to Senate Bill 1575. I am speaking as a member of a group of neighbors negatively impacted by Mark Fritsch Log Homes manufacturing business, which is currently operating directly across the road from or near to our properties. At this time, I would like to acknowledge those neighbors who traveled here today by having them stand for a moment, if they would. Our experience with Mr. Fritsch began in September 2011, when his log home manufacturing business suddenly appeared on the Timber Resource Zone property across the road from our houses and began full operation. Our concerns about the noise and pollution and Mr. Fritsch's industrial operations' obvious incompatibility with our long-established residential neighborhood began what has been a very long and drawn-out and expensive legal process, as he unsuccessfully pursued a conditional use permit to legally operate on that property. As frustratingly long as this process has been, it has given us the opportunity to express our concerns and to learn how big a part the land use planning process played in addressing those concerns. To date, our concerns that this industrial operation is incompatible with our neighborhood have been validated by our local community planning organization, the county hearings officer, LUBA, and by the State Court of Appeals. We fear that if Senate Bill 1575 becomes law, operations like Mr. Fritsch's could show up like he has done, pollute the air and surface water like he has done, daily produce industrial-level noise like he has done, endanger wild fish in the nearby Sandy River like he has done, create visual blight like he has done, and degrade the market value of neighboring properties like he has done. And people like us would have little or no recourse. We feel that land use laws and the equitable process for creating them are essential to the long-term viability of Oregon. And Senate Bill 1575 appears to be little more than an attempt to circumvent them for the benefit of a select few. That is why we oppose this bill. Thank you for your consideration.
Any questions?
Questions?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Close.
Roger, you mentioned half a dozen chemicals. Are these legal chemicals by law? Or are you implying these are illegal chemicals?
Chair Roblin, Senator Close, these are pressure treatment chemicals that are legally made and used for the treatment of wood. If you know anything about the building trade, pressure treated wood is used when wood comes into contact with the soil, because there are insects and fungal organisms that live in the soil that consume the wood as part of their diet, termites and other things. These are legal chemicals, but to actually use them in a forest zone so that we might see spills into, I'm not sure how far the Sandy River is from this location, but we've recently seen the effect of chemical spills in West Virginia that affected the city of Cincinnati. And there was a substantial drinking water crisis emergency in the city of Cincinnati. So we're concerned.
So is this the treated wood that people make fences out of in their backyard? Is that the treated wood you're talking about?
Yes, I believe so. Okay. But I'm not sure if if the gentleman, if the applicant is talking about using these particular chemicals or some other chemicals,
okay,
because there's a wide variety of chemicals that can be used, this list is not complete by any means.
And Mr. Roach, you mentioned polluting the air and surface water, endangering fish. I believe that's illegal. Has Mr. Fish been cited for breaking the law of polluting the air and surface water? Or?
At this point, I do not know that. I know that we have contacted the Department of Environmental Quality, and they have referred the enforcement of our concerns to Clackamas County. And as this whole process of application for conditional use has occurred, it seems that Clackamas County has done very little to oversee what's going on over there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you. Mark Nystrom and Mike McAllister.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Mark Nystrom from the Association of Oregon Counties. AOC supports Senate Bill 1575. We believe it creates the opportunity to make local land use decisions locally. We also believe that it has an opportunity to create new economic opportunities. I'd like to introduce Clackamas County Planner Mike McAllister. He's going to go into more detail.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. As Mark mentioned, I'm the, for the record, it's Mike McAllister. I'm the planning director for Clackamas County. I am here to provide testimony in support of the bill. I appreciate the opportunity to do so. The Board of County Commissioners is unable to participate and testify today. They did ask me to come down and to convey their support, unanimous support for the bill. I believe in your materials you have a letter from the board dated February 12, 2014. As Mr. Fritsch and Mr. Honeycutt talked about, I think, you know, one of the main issues here is sort of clarifying what primary processing means. And I think everybody would agree that the current law does not really identify the scope of what primary processing is. And I think in the context of the land use application, for Mr. Fritsch, what the hearings officer, in effect, found is that there were certain activities that Mr. Fritsch were doing that qualify for primary processing. And then at some point, when other activities going, particularly assembling the logs and disassembling the logs, the hearing officer viewed that and some of those other activities more as manufacturing and not primary process anymore. And I think that's really kind of the real important part of this discussion today. And the law doesn't. It just says primary processing. And I think the idea that defining it, and particularly other where you are doing primary processing and other things that might be incidental to that primary processing or necessary to that primary processing, is a good discussion to have. And I think it would go a long way towards clarifying those types of activities that are appropriate on forest land. In this case, the county's hands are tied in this. The decision was denied by the hearings officer and subsequent court, so a legislative change is the only way to provide Clackamas County and other counties with the flexibility to address this land use issue and to assist Mr. Fritsch in getting some land use approval for the business that he needs to operate. The Clackamas County Commissioners do view this bill as important for Mr. Fritsch, but also for other counties in the state. I think it goes a long way towards doing value-added products in the forest zones. And Mr. Honeycutt mentioned, you know, there's been a lot of that discussion in the farm districts for wineries and other sort of activities occurring there, and value added is sort of the buzzword this day, and I think it potentially is something that should be considered and why this bill is important. It will certainly influence economic growth and provide jobs and business and for small businesses. The county did have concern with the initial bill, and we do support the Dash 1 amendment that basically keeps a local review process. The original bill essentially allowed the use outright. Clackamas County has a process right now for the primary processing that requires a conditional use permit, goes through a hearings officer review, public hearing. That is an opportunity for the county to address impacts on surrounding farm and forest uses, to consider concerns of the neighbors relative to noise, dust, traffic, safety issues, et cetera, on the site on an individual case-by-case basis. So the other thing that I would like you to consider is Mr. Fritsch showed some good pictures of his operation. And, you know, to consider those in the scope of other primary processing activities that can occur. So a large mill would be allowed where they're doing primary processing of logs, where it could be 24/7 operations, lots of log trucks going, log storage areas, and lots of other processes. And look at that in the scope of what you saw Mr. Fritsch provide. A lot of the activities are very similar. With that, I appreciate the opportunity to provide this testimony and the board's view on this, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Questions?
Question.
Yes, Senator Brzezinski.
When the hearings officer made his decision, what's the next step in the process? Doesn't the county commissioners have an opportunity to weigh in?
In Clackamas County, no. The land use hearings officer is appointed by the Board of County Commissioners to hear certain land use decisions, and the county hearings officer decision is the final decision, so it required to go to LUBA and up.
Yes. That was a choice by the county.
Correct.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we'll have Nancy Haig and Don Minch.
Hi, I'm Nancy Haig. I'm from Brightwood, Oregon. As a full-time resident, living 750 feet away from, but still within earshot of Mr. Fritsch's operation, I want to give you my input on Senate Bill 1575. In our particular area, it is common for residential and forest land to be adjacent. It is expected that forest resource lands will be logged from time to time with a season or two that will be very disruptive to nearby residential areas with noise, heavy machinery, stream disturbance, new clear cuts. The significance of this bill is that it will allow for these disturbances to be ongoing instead of temporary next to this residential area. Our present land use system allows for conditional use permits for review of these types of activities. The Clackamas County Hearings Officer denied a conditional use permit for Mr. Fritsch's operation based on it is not a primary use of forest and farm lands. LUBA upheld this decision. The Oregon State Court of Appeals also upheld LUBA's decision. This bill would redefine resource land as including an industrial use. This bill would take away any ability for citizens to participate in the land use decision process. In addition, there would be no oversight for chemicals used on forest land, such as wood preservatives, diesel, that could be getting into nearby streams and the Sandy River, which is very close by and is a fish-bearing stream. The appropriate area for operations like Mr. Fritsch's are in industrial zone lands. I would also like to mention as well, I know this is out of line, but Senate Bill 1578 is very similar and problematic for similar reasons. In the name of an unidentifiable emergency, this bill overturns all of our land use laws and, most importantly, gives citizens very little or no input into these zoning changes. To me, expedite apparently means to force industrial activity where there is not currently zoned for and is objected to by surrounding landowners, and sets the stage for continuing conflicts in these interface areas, such as what's happening with Fritsch and us. I hope you will carefully consider the impact of these bills on the quality of life of your constituents. Certainly jobs are important, but for most Oregonians, so is where and how you live. So please stop these harmful bills before they leave your committee. Thank you very much.
We would try to keep testimony directly to this bill. The next bill has other amendments. So.
Sorry.
Anyway, thanks.
Good afternoon. My name is Don Minch. I live in Zigzag on Lolo Pass Road, about 7 miles upstream from the Fritch operation. I want to bring your attention to the Clackamas County letter that was submitted in the record, because I'm going to refer to that. But I've lived in the area almost 30 years, and I've worked with Clackamas County as a citizen on the community planning organization operation in Mount Hood Corridor, CPO. And through that process, I've seen a lot of conditional use permits gone through. And one of the problems that we have here sometimes is that through the application process, the operations are allowed to get up and get started and operate even during that application process. And so now we've grown into the situation where an operation has been established and denied, and that has caused a lot of conflict. For myself, I have property that has private timberland and U.S. Forest Service land next to me, and I've lived with lots of logging, and I don't have a problem with that. I see it happen, and the trees start growing back, and it's very copacetic with my residential lifestyle. But the idea of having manufacturing and industrial use on those timber zones would completely change my residential situation. I've heard the definitions talked about primary processing, but in Clackamas County zoning, there's primary uses for lands, and then we have conditional uses, and in all that, we have these definitions of what we can expect to live next to for a long time. When you start to change through the legislation the use of timber land, where people can now come in and use that land completely different than what the tradition has been, which is growing trees, you substantially change the circumstances for neighboring property owners. In Clackamas County, we have a comprehensive plan that goes together with our zoning ordinance, and in that, it refers to our timberlands as primary use of growing trees. It also states in there, in the comprehensive plan, that it is to maintain and improve the quality of air, water, and land resources. Now, setting up manufacturing and industrial use in a timber zone is not maintaining and improving those qualities. So we're in direct conflict with the comprehensive plan, the way I see it. I spent over 30 years in construction in my career, and I'm now retired. But in that, I did a lot of construction, including single-family residence and industrial construction, and I specialize a lot in fire protection. And when you start to put industrial manufacturing up, you're required to have fire hydrants, fire protection, fire sprinklers, all sorts of infrastructure that does not exist in the timber zoning. So putting manufacturing and industrial uses in a timber zone is not a good idea. So somehow in the structure of this, when you start to look beyond the existing uses of logs and you open it up to doing industrial manufacturing in a timber zoning, you're going to be in direct conflict with what we've accepted for decades in the state. And I keep going back to the idea, timberland and agricultural land is limited. They have to be maintained for growing trees and crops and other agricultural uses. And opening it up to industrial uses is in direct conflict with what cities like Sandy and Estacada have done, where they're trying to pull in those manufacturing and industrial and commercial uses into their zones that are set up with fire hydrants and fire protection and the infrastructure that's needed for that construction. I just want you to remember that if you allow this construction use, it's not like the house gets built once and people move in and live there. You're building things and taking them apart and trucking them in and out on a continuous basis. It could be perpetuity. And it's a very different situation to living with a logging operation that happens and then it stops for decades while the trees grow. One other thing I'd like to point out is in the development standards and forest zoning, They set a primary fuel break of 30 feet around the entire development of a house in a timber zone. And that fuel break standard in the secondary area can be up to 180 feet in Clackamas County. If you establish a manufacturing operation in a timber zone, you're not only going to have this operation that takes up acreage with a lot of equipment and a lot of potential fire hazard, but then you're going to have a primary fuel break and a secondary fuel break, which again is taking timber production out of the timber zone. Any questions?
Thank you very much.
This letter that Clackamas County wrote, I was at a town hall meeting January 25th, and Commissioner Ludlow was there. He did not bring up this bill or this issue at the town hall meeting in Welch's. And he talks about it having consensus amongst the commissioners. He didn't bring it to our CPO. They didn't discuss it at the town hall meeting 3 weeks ago. This is a blindsiding of the local community where the commissioners are making a political act, not discussing this issue openly in the community. Thank you very much.
So next, we have Chuck Vance. And I will tell you that right now, I am leaning towards, because I think this is a fairly broad deal, that we're looking at having a work group that's going to work on this, because I think we do need to have a definition. I think that's really important. And I think the way that either of the amendments that currently stand are written, it's a little too broad. I like the other one that was not constitutional, but it was better. So I think I anticipate at the end of this that we will set up, and I will work with Beth to have a little work group. We'll get a hold of people. But those that still want to testify, we'll have a couple more. So the next group is Chuck Vance and Roger Beyer. And try to keep it as quick as you can. If people have already said the thing you want to say, we've got that. So keep it going, because we have another couple bills after this one.
Thank you. My name I'm Chuck Vance. So my family and I live in Sandy, the heart of Clackamas County. I'm a lifelong active participant in the forest products industry here in Western Oregon. I've done it all and seen the rest, from contract timber harvesting, timber falling, commercial fishing, tree planting, farming, custom lumber milling, to wildland firefighting, and far more than we have time to discuss here today. Those of us who actually toil in the forests and fields and on the seas off our coast don't have the luxury of being dry and warm, comfortable or safe on a daily basis, such as most of you here now enjoy. We built the roads you drive on every day. We harvested the timber which make your homes that protect you and your families. We grow the food and catch the fish that feed you, your children, and grandchildren. What we receive back in large measure in the way of thanks is a daily increasing strangulation in the form of endless additional regulatory constraints by multiple levels of government agencies, many of which are at cross-purpose to their supposed goals, often in a capricious and arbitrary fashion. We are still here and continue to reverently care for our earth as we always have. There are no greater or more loving stewards of the land than those who daily sweat and bleed for it. If we are to strive for a balanced approach and practice truly sustainable management of our resources, then there is no question than to be in support of active forest utilization in all its evolving myriad forms. I am a primary forest product processor, PFPP, even according to the most narrow definition thereof. Therein is the crux of why we are here. Land use decisions today statewide are increasingly turning to allow for only the most narrowly interpreted application of definitions. No one foresaw the need to spell out some of these things exactly or specifically, because no one could have possibly imagined the lengths to which some would go, in spite of all common sense and decency, to further their own personal and partisan agendas. Senate Bill 1575 is necessary to correct omissions which are now being used to further persecute, subjugate, and eliminate some of the last remaining segments of traditional Oregon culture and historical, not to mention economic, significance. This has become far more than a personal issue for me, and it far transcends any personal loyalties or affiliations. You would be hard-pressed to find a more traditional conservative than myself. Mark Fritsch there, a man square in the bullseye of regulatory overreach, refers to himself as a progressive. On many levels, these two types are not generally thought of as compatible. In today's climate, I dare say we are compelled by the hidden drone messaging of the media to loathe one another. This much I can say without reservation about Mark. He is an honorable, honest, and forthright man. The young would do well to honor and emulate his ethics, integrity, and values. Mark strives for the common good, as do I. If he and I can come together, can you, as legislators, do any less? The challenge here is to clarify by simple language what most of us know as traditional and customary forms of land use and employment on land zoned timber, and to do so in a nonpartisan fashion, setting aside personal and party allegiances to bring about some measure of security to the rural residents of our state, relying on you for justice and fairness. Symbols are very important. As you walked up to the Capitol building today, did you glance up at the very top? Does the Golden Pioneer ever inspire you to dream about what it meant to be an actual pioneer back in the 1840s, or what it means to be a pioneer today? I'll bet he lived in a log home. Without honoring the good of the past, you do not deserve the fruits of the present or of the future. Failing passage of Senate Bill 1575, I propose that you replace the Golden Pioneer with a chrome-plated urban hipster clad in skinny jeans, staring transfixedly at a smartphone in one hand and a steaming organic soy chai in the other. The choice is yours. Make no mistake, when a person's livelihood is threatened by the wanton abuse of a system designed to protect all of us, this is an act of overt, violent aggression. We need to put in place Senate Bill 1575 to avoid more of this in the future and provide a safe and stable economic environment. At least you know where I stand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Our 1,500-plus members are located all over the state, and we rely on primary wood product manufacturing facilities to have a market for our product. We support Senate Bill 1575 because without these markets, and we've seen across the state a loss of many of these processing facilities over the past couple decades. So anything that we can do at the state level to encourage or to allow more processing facilities in the woods close to our forests will help our members in getting them markets. I hear you say you're going to have a work group. I'd be happy to help serve on that. I'd like to have our voice at the table because our members need these facilities. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Look forward to more discussion.
Next question. Just a quick one.
Mr. Vance.
Yes.
As a person that I've spent my entire working career in the woods, thank you for those words.
Anyway, thank you all, both. Next, and again, I would ask you to keep it close because we do have two other bills, and I have a group that wants to talk. So it looks like John Bork, Neil Dannon, and we might have Steve McCoy come on up too, get all three of them. So we're missing one of those. John.
I'm John.
Right. And we've got Steve. Dan. Is it Neil? Okay. So we'll bring up Jonathan Menton. Go ahead. You can start.
Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing me to testify this afternoon. My name is John Borge. I spent over 30 years in the land use business, ironically, for Clackamas County. And I was a principal planner there, involved with interpreting and writing some of the things that you folks obviously have to spend time reviewing, arbitrating, et cetera. But what I want to do is I want to make it clear that, number one, I don't live next door to this thing. That's your talk about, the log home building business. Number two, I'm not a paid consultant for anybody here. I'm here because I do share a passion for how our land use system operates and the ability of people to participate in that process, which is why we're here today. And frankly, in listening to the testimony here, it occurs to me the current rule is not complicated at all. The current rule works very, very good. And it was actually arbitrated quite thoroughly and vetted just this last summer with Clackamas County, went through the Land Use Board of Appeals, was upheld by the Court of Appeals, and essentially defined what primary processing is. Now, there's three myths that I've heard through the testimony today. One is that this type of use is resource dependent, that it has to be out in our forest areas. A second myth is that it's going to create job opportunities. And the third myth is that it's going to help our rural cities. And let's just start with the second one, create job opportunities. These facilities will operate regardless of where you're going to allow them. The question isn't creating job opportunities. The question before us is, where are we going to locate these types of facilities? And there are better places to locate these types of facilities than in our forest areas. It's not creating jobs. It's essentially locating them where the jobs are supposed to be. And where do these rural types of facilities belong? They belong in our rural cities. They belong in our rural communities. These are resource-dependent facilities that belong in those rural areas because those rural areas are clamoring for this type of industry. And these are manufacturing plants. They go far beyond the primary processing of log scaling and mills. You heard a number of different descriptions trying to relate this to a simple cutting down of logs, and it has to be located in a forest area because that's where the logs are. The fact of the matter, in this particular case, these logs, at least the last I heard, these logs were coming out of Molalla. Molalla is a long way from Sandy, and this is 15 miles east of Sandy. And the applicant, who was a proponent of this legislation, also said that he does 10 loads of these logs a year. 10. That's less than one a month. So why do we have to look at putting these types of facilities, which are fabrication plants, in our resource zones because they get one load of logs a month? And they're located a long ways away. So it makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense. And the third thing is that these types of facilities are, you let these types of facilities in, and if you buy into that they're the log related, you can make that same argument for furniture, for log cabinets. It's essentially a contractor's construction type of fabrication plant. And that's what we're talking here. The current law does very, very well. It's really not broke. We don't need to fix it. And I'll be happy to answer any questions if you
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jonathan Manton, and I'm here today on behalf of Friends of the Metolius as well as Central Oregon Land Watch. I'll just take a minute to register our opposition to this bill. I understand that you're looking at putting together a work group, and so I thank you for that. Of course, offer my assistance if that's something that the committee wants. Just note that much of the Metolius area of critical state concern is in forest zones, so there may well be some unintended consequences due to some of the very broad definitions that are in this bill. And so with that, I'll just save time for everybody else. Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I am Steve McCoy representing 1000 Friends of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. So in the case that spawned this bill, LUBA found in its determination of facts that after noise complaints from residential neighbors, the county initiated an enforcement action which prompted petitioner's application for a conditional use permit. So they were operating without a permit to begin with, according to LUBA and the Court of Appeals. So in effect, this is an unlawfully established facility operating without a permit that only sought permitting when the dismayed neighbors complained about it. Looking at this situation in the abstract, it's frustrating that every session we have someone who didn't play by the rules come to the legislature to get their unlawful use validated. Everybody spends a lot of time and energy. The state spends a lot of time and energy to fix a problem that should have never been a problem to begin with. Here, unusually, the hearings officer said, go seek legislative relief. From what I understood from Mr. Fritch's testimony, what he said was, go seek legislative relief from your Board of County Commissioners. The Board of County Commissioners is a legislative body, of course. And I would say that if that had been done, this bill would be superfluous. If instead the legislative relief sought had been at the county level, gone to the Board of County Commissioners, rather than going to the state legislature and using all the resources of the state work on this issue, we wouldn't be here today. Like other bills of its ilk, I think SB 1575 should be killed. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Griffin? We're going to. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I do. Okay. So I'm going to. We have about five or six other people, but we have a bill that I want to get to before our 5 o'clock deadline. And after that, I will reopen this hearing and take any testimony from people that have left. I'll stay here because I can do that as a person, but we are going to be doing a work group on this one. So I'm going to put on recess this public hearing. And with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on.
Do you want to take care of your bill first?
Yeah, let's just move that.
So I'm going to open a work session for the purpose of moving Senate Joint Resolution 201 to the Rules Committee. So I'm going to open a work session, and I will hear from
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Joint Memorial 201 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules.
Senator Bertschinger moves Senate Joint Resolution 201 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion?
Question. There was a couple of amendments that were being proposed. We're just going to forward them to them for their consideration?
We are. Is there any other discussion? Is there any opposition to this resolution? Seeing none, it is so moved, and it will be on its way to. Thank you, sir. With that, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1578. And with that, we'll have a short explanation. And
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Knopf, do you want to bring whoever you want to bring up with you? And with that, we'll have a short explanation. And we're going to just cover the amendments because, as people know, many people know, we are not considering this entire bill. We're only considering the portion of this bill that has to do with the biomass part. So all the rest of the land use stuff is not going to be considered, just so people know. And with that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so there are three amendments in your packet. The -4 amendment would delete all the measures, all the provisions in the measure, except those amending the requirement that green energy technologies be part of new public buildings or extensive renovations to public buildings. It would add woody biomass to those statutes. And then the -5 amendment again replaces the measure, would in this case authorize a local contracting agency to submit a request to the Department of Energy to waive the requirement to hold in reserve funds that were not spent on green energy technology in a public building and establish conditions for the department to issue such a waiver. And then the -6 amendment takes the -4 and the -5 and puts them together.
And with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. State Senator Tim Knope from Senate District 27, which is Redmond, Tumalo, Bend, and Sun River. And I know we're going to stick to the amendments today, and I just wanted to let you know that this is a, you know, right out of the legislative vault for great ideas. There are some good ideas in that vault. This is one of them. And Commissioner, Deschutes County Commissioner Tony DeBone, who's with me here today, brought this to me and said that this was an issue. And I looked at it, and it's an issue of fairness, and equity, and efficiency. And in a lot of communities, there isn't necessarily the opportunity to use a solar, although we've used that in the past. And geothermal was added, which is great. But there are parts of the state that could benefit from biomass being added to the requirement for the 1.5% on public buildings. And so I would encourage you to pick the best amendment that you think accomplishes that goal. There's obviously more to this bill that won't be considered today, but if you did just this biomass part, you would be doing something that would be efficient and effective for lots of communities, and it would also, I believe, create jobs too, which I think is should be more of a focus for the legislature. So I'd like to thank you for taking it up and having the hearing today.
Thank you very much.
Chair Robland and members of the committee, thank you very much for having us today. I do have a support letter that was provided in your packet from the Deschutes County Commissioners. We discussed it yesterday afternoon and Amendment 4, and by the time I got here this morning, it was at Amendment 6. But it sounds like those would be supported, so our letter of support was for Amendment 4. We do support this this bill for its biomass component, supporting pellet mills, pellet operations, rough chip suppliers that do support jobs. We do have this opportunity in Deschutes County and other parts of eastern Oregon where there are chip logs. There's supply of tops of trees and branches that can be chipped, and they're a good supply of biomass. New boiler construction, medium-sized boilers could provide the opportunity for the heating of water and space needs in new government-constructed buildings. We do have the opportunity right now for some kind of a wave of construction being planned. This bill would provide the opportunity for this option to be evaluated with solar and geothermal for some new schools that are being that have been funded, that are being planned right now. So I think of architects and building designers, you know, this will be just another opportunity to say, what do the numbers look like when they run this heat calculations and the BTU loads, how much money could be saved with this opportunity. With that, thank you very much for having us today.
Thank you. Any questions for this group? Thank you both.
Very good.
Let's see. So let's just go with Mark Nystrom, Tracy Breton, and Bill Kluding. And if you can keep your testimony fairly short, it would be helpful, so thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Robland, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tracy Rutten with the League of Oregon Cities. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of the Dash 4, Dash 5, and Dash 6 amendments. Our cities are eager to make investments in green energy technologies in an effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, invest in our renewable industry and economy, and to reduce our energy costs for public services, which is a benefit to the citizens that we represent. The Dash 4 and Dash 6 amendments include language that would expand the definition of qualifying green energy technology under the 1.5% requirement for public buildings. This current definition, as you've heard, includes solar and geothermal, and we support the addition of adding woody biomass to that list. We believe this change will allow for additional flexibility for local governments to make green energy investments that make the most sense for a particular project or a particular community, and that can best leverage energy savings for that entity as well. As I mentioned, our communities are eager to invest in these green energy technologies, and we want to ensure that they have as much flexibility in the investments as possible to ensure that public dollars are invested wisely. The language in the Dash 5 and also included in the Dash 6 amendments is a result of some conversation that occurred following the passage of House Bill 3169 last session and during the rulemaking process. And it really has to do with some changes that were made to the 1.5% requirement and a requirement for funds to be carried forward for a future project if you, if a public entity decides that the investment in green energy technology is not appropriate for a certain project. Examples of that might be if there's too many trees around a certain building, it just doesn't pencil out. There's also some benchmark performance in the rules. So that the investment actually results in a reduction that makes sense for that entity. In that scenario, the public contracting agency would need to set aside the funds and apply those towards a future public building project. During that process of rulemaking, several public contracting agencies representing a variety of local jurisdictions inquired as to how long the funds would need to be set aside for a future project. The primary concern expressed was for communities that may not see an investment made in a building for many years to come. This situation is much more likely to occur, we think, in small and rural communities. The language in the Dash 5 and the Dash 6 amendments would allow for a public contracting agency who has held on to those funds for more than 5 years to petition the Oregon Department of Energy for a waiver to the requirement. It would be at the director's discretion then to either grant that waiver or to say, no, you need to hold on to those funds for a little longer. If another 5 years has passed and there are no public building projects that have been identified that are coming down the line, the funds would be carried then over and be able to be used for other purposes. We simply feel it's just not good public policy to hold on to those funds indefinitely, and especially if a community and its citizens are having financial struggles to deal with. And what I would say is, we prefer the Dash 6 amendments to go forward today that's got that provision included. We are very supportive of the Dash 4 amendments. So we thank the Senator and also Jenny Dressler for the work they've done on this. So if that's where the committee needs to go, we understand that. We'd be open to conversations in the interim to get that fix in. Like I said, many of our communities are making really remarkable investments in green energy technologies that are even outside of this specific statute. So we are always open to opportunities, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Mark Nystrom. I am AOC staff, and I also staff a group called SOCIA, the Southern Oregon Clean Energy Alliance. Both of these organizations strongly support the inclusion of woody biomass in the 1.5% renewable energy requirement. I'd just like to emphasize that I'm not going to repeat what Tracy just said, but AOC strongly supports also the concept of having a periodic review of these these reserve funds. We really feel like it could be a benefit to the smaller communities, smaller counties that are struggling economically. And I'll let the folks behind me who know a lot more about woody biomass speak on the behalf of that great technology.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Roblin, Vice Chair, Committee for the Record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. This is a very good bill. We all know that rural Oregon is hurting. High unemployment, cities, counties are broke. Industrial facility that creates jobs. Manufacturing facilities that creates a job. Natural resource facilities creates jobs. These will be high paying, good 7 days a week, 12 months out of the year jobs. We need these jobs. I just urge the state agencies to step up and help these cities and counties expedite these sites for these facilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. So we will have Teresa Gibney, Tony DeBone, and Paul Bell. I think I said that wrong. Oh, Tony was already up there, wasn't he? Yeah. So we can have Bruce. From Ochoco Lumber Company. Which Bruce is that? Thank you, Bruce.
Is that the first time that I've been? Careful
now. Okay.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Teresa Gibney. I'm a citizen advocate for the League of Women Voters in the National Natural Resources area. You have my testimony on OLIS, but in summary, my testimony expresses League opposition to the Dash 5 and Dash 6 amendments and League neutrality on the Dash 4 amendments and, of course, strong League opposition to the original bill as introduced. Our opposition is based on study-based positions on climate change mitigation, but more importantly, on common sense positions on good government. Our primary objective is that the Dash 5s create an unhealthy, Dash 5s and Dash 6s, create an unhealthy incentive for local and county governments to use their granted authority to declare for any reason that installing green energy technology on a particular project is inappropriate. There is no other entity who can ask the counties or cities to comply with the original legislative intent, which was clearly to incent installation of green energy technology at the time of construction of new buildings. The unhealthy incentive is that if the city or county uses that granted authority to declare installation inappropriate, they then may, 5 years later, request a waiver to transfer the funds reserved for green energy installation under the original, perhaps, bonding of the construction into their general fund. Doing so essentially could set up a transfer of bonded money to the general fund that could be quite tempting for poor, strapped, struggling governments around the state. But this is not a well-designed system. The intent, legislative intent of the original bill was not to set up a reserve of construction funds, even for our cash-strapped counties. Thank you.
Thank you. Bruce.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Roblin. My name is Bruce Doc Savage.
Okay.
And I'm with Ochoco Lumber Company.
Yep.
Ochoco Lumber is a family-owned company established in 1925 in Prineville, Oregon. We currently have a sawmill and a biomass facility in John Day, Oregon. We produce pellets and compressed bricks. We sell these bricks in the open market, but in particular, we sell the bricks in bulk to a number of institutional public-type buildings. For example, the Harney District Hospital in Burns, the John Day High School called Grant County High School. We sell pellets to them for thermal heat, and the payback of these pellets and the savings in heat is astronomical. The numbers that we recently have been reported to us is a Grant Union High School in particular has saved 50% of their energy costs using pellets. At the Blue Mountain Hospital, $152,000 a year have been saved in energy cost by the use of the renewable resource pellets. We're producing about 20,000 ton right now, and we'd like to invest further in pellet production in Grant County, increase our employment base. We currently have 90 employees with our sawmill, and we'd like to add quite a few more, and in 3 or 4 years, double our production. We think the market is there. It's been proven in other states, in particular in Maine. They support homeowners getting $5,000 rebate credits. New Hampshire has incentives for putting pellets, boilers in commercial locations. Governor Cuomo, state of Oregon, and state of New York, and the State of the Union addressed the economic and environmental benefits of pellets. So we support the amendment to the bill and hope that you also do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I suspect you're not the right person to ask this, but I'll ask you anyway since you work in the biomass area.
Yes.
One of the concerns that I would have is it is a burning process. What steps are taken in the biomass process to make sure that it doesn't actually contribute to greenhouse gases?
Yeah. Well, there will be experts behind me that can address the greenhouse
well, we'll
gases.
We'll wait for
but,
them then.
I can assure you that given the alternatives, for example, in the communities that we live and work in, there is no natural gas. So you're either going to burn fuels that do kick into the environment, propanes and oils. And this is an alternative to that. It's a cheaper alternative. We dry the product. There's no additives. There's no preservatives. They're gluten-free. and they're relatively cheap. And the most important thing that we're doing is we're closing the cycle of forest health. We're taking thinnings in raw materials out of the forest, putting people to work in our small communities, and we're recycling through the system, the jobs, and we're adding jobs to John Day, Oregon, that has some of the highest unemployment in the state for a county. So,
thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will have Chris Tenney. Is Paul Bell? Paul here?
Yeah. He's here.
Okay, and Paul? And?
Somebody with him, maybe? Marcus.
Oh, and there's a Marcus Hoffman? Yep.
I'll go first.
And again, I will encourage people to keep it fairly short. We're getting close to time, but thank you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity to provide testimony. I'm Chris Tenney. I work with Walking Point Farms, and we're a service-disabled, veteran-owned small business located in Tigard. And I'm excited about 1578 in general. I don't read a lot of legislation, but it seems like common sense. It seems like this is the kind of thing that Oregon's rural economies need. And I've worked hand-in-hand with entrepreneurs in the tech industry in the Pearl District, those, as they've been called, hipsters in some sense. And they're great. They provide a tremendous value to Oregon in general, but it's pretty well located in Portland. This taking advantage of our natural resources, specifically these amendments for biomass, is the way forward, really the only way forward for Oregon's rural economies. And for us, one of the things that can kind of address some of the issues about greenhouse gas emissions, some of the processes that we're interested in developing right now are value adds for biomass. So it's not just the burning of raw material, but it's the value add after the burning. We can create something called biochar with biomass, which is basically the cooking of woody biomass in the absence of oxygen, and it creates what's in essence charcoal. And eventually, it effectively sequesters carbon in a stable form that's persistent for thousands of years. It's scientifically proven. It's not conjecture. That's the way it works. And we can also produce bio oils in these processes. So you have two very valuable byproducts from this process that you can use in conjunction with the energy and the heat that's generated from this. So there's really three very valuable assets that come off from utilizing this biomass in this method. And that's primarily the reason. That's primarily the focus of what we're looking at, is bringing these value adds to market, developing the markets. It's a new industry. There's going to be hurdles to overcome, and it's not clicking at the moment. But we're building steady demand for it in the marketplace, and as that demand grows, we will find the support, and we will be bringing facilities, developing jobs, and it will go directly to the rural economies, as precisely where it needs to be. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Paul Bell. I serve as the Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Forestry. With me here at the table is Marcus Kaufman, the department's forest biomass resource specialist. We appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 1578 as amended to make biomass an eligible green energy technology. Additionally, the department believes this legislation will help to meet department goals in maintaining healthy forests and rural jobs and economies. So with that, Marcus will provide some specifics out of our written testimony.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Marcus Kaufman. I serve as the biomass resource specialist for the Oregon Department of Forestry. When the legislature passed this bill in 2007, it was a means for stimulating demand for solar technologies. The legislature amended that in 2012 to include geothermal. And the logic for including biomass in that aligns perfectly with the goals of increasing green energy technologies for the end user and recognizes the diversity of Oregon's renewable resources. In some places, solar is going to make sense. In some places, geothermal is going to make sense. In some places, biomass is going to make sense. And that's because our renewable resources are not evenly distributed across the whole state. So we have that logical extension of both the legislation and the diversity in Oregon's renewable technologies. So the other part about the inclusion is that green technologies at state facilities helps promote the use of these technologies in the private sector. So this is an important part of the bill because there's a pathway forward. We walk our talk at the state level. We show familiarity. We develop a track record, and that helps for adoption into the private sector. And that's an important part that is true for solar, geothermal, biomass, and other technologies. So we have 20 existing biomass heat facilities around the state, as Bruce Doc Savage was mentioning, and most of those are located at public facilities. The impetus for those facilities is usually energy savings. Most of them use Oregon's wood pellets, some of them come from the woods, as Bruce Doc Savage mentioned, but most of them are using mill residuals, which is a byproduct of our lumber mills and plywood plants. So what we get there is, if we have this inclusion in the bill, we're going to get density of these facilities around the state, which is going to increase that familiarity. And the requirement also makes it easier for adoption by the private sector. So just a couple moments of why biomass market is important for the rest of the state. So the use of biomass technology provides ongoing employment and forest health benefits. So when these systems are installed, they have to be fed with fuel. A lot of times these are heating systems and electrical generation. So that's an in-woods component, that's a manufacturing component that goes on throughout the life of the system. So biomass heating, cooling, electrical generation systems are mature, commercially proven technologies. Some of these systems offer efficiencies of heating of up to over 80%. From the supply perspective, we have ample feedstock of both pellets, wood chips, cordwood, and there's a connection which is very important to us, which is the forest to energy connection. So we're creating markets for the byproducts of both forest restoration, active management, and our manufacturing sector. So just in closing, this amendment can help level the playing field and will foster jobs and improve forest health. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you all have, and thank you for the opportunity.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Andrew Harden, Gordon Morrison, Phil Chang, and Jeff, you'd be the last person, so you might as well be up and ready to go. Because now, you can kind of come up front here. And
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today in support of Senate Bill 1578 as amended. My name is Andrew Hayden, and I'm president of Wisewood Incorporated, based in Portland, Oregon. We're a biomass energy project development, design, and construction company. Our small but growing company is focused solely on community-scale biomass energy projects. And we've been responsible for numerous community-scale biomass energy installations in eastern and western Oregon over the past few years. We see a bright future where all Oregon communities are powered by renewable electricity from the sun and wind and are heated by clean, renewable biomass energy technology, and we work hard every day to make that vision a reality. When asked to provide testimony, I immediately thought of an experience I had a few years back involving the new Oregon Department of Forestry building in John Day. When I was working on the construction of the pellet mill at Malheur Lumber Company, I was approached by project managers of the new ODF building to explore biomass heating for the building. However, when I was contacted, the ODF project was over 95% design complete and nearly ready for bid. The project managers had just learned of biomass heating systems and were eager to know more. However, the project was simply too far along to make the required changes to the design of the heating system to incorporate biomass technology. Instead, the project installed propane furnaces and is now consuming significant quantities of imported fossil fuel in John Day, a town where a new pellet mill is churning out premium quality biomass fuel just 2 miles away from this building. The irony of this situation was not lost on the local community and was the source of much consternation that continues to this day. Senate Bill 1578 will ensure that this situation never happens again. By requiring public agencies to invest part of their budget in green energy technologies, including biomass, we can create windows of opportunity at the most appropriate time when a building is first being engineered. The project managers of the ODF building in John Day were open to incorporating biomass into their building, but received no signals from official channels that this was something that the public sector was in support of, so their interest came too late. If they had understood that biomass was an option at the outset of the project, we could have helped them implement a successful project that would be utilizing local biomass fuel and supporting local employment in John Day. Instead, they are burning propane with 90% of that money leaving Oregon. I encourage you to support Senate Bill 1578 to create jobs in forested communities, keep energy dollars circulating locally, support forest stewardship, and increase our energy independence and reduce our CO2 emissions. Thank you.
You don't have to be very close. You're fine.
Okay. Senator Roblin, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today. I brought a copy to hand in, and I also brought some handout material.
We're coming to it.
So I'm Phil Chang. I work for the Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council. But a lot of what I do there is I coordinate our forest restoration collaboratives. that work on the Deschutes and the Ochoco National Forests. And these are groups that are working to resolve past conflicts and forge new agreements that can sustain our forests into the future, while at the same time shoring up our economy and preserving our quality of life in the Central Oregon region. In these collaboratives, people don't agree on everything. But we're working together, we're working with the Forest Service, and we are identifying balanced prescriptions that can reduce the risk of high-severity fire to our communities and to our forests to promote the development of ecologically important large tree structures and to produce medium and small-diameter logs for value-added processing in our communities. When we implement these win-win prescriptions, they produce a lot of biomass. So it would be wonderful if you could go in and treat the forest and, you know, it was all high-value material. But we produce a lot of tops and limbs, small trees. And at times when the chip market is bad, we produce a lot of chip logs as well that have no home. And it's incredibly expensive to dispose of this material. And as a result, the amount of acres we're able to restore each year is limited. I'll take a little side trip here to answer Senator Burdick's question about greenhouse gas emissions. We would love to see a world where a lot more of this material was burned under high-efficiency controlled combustion conditions to generate energy so we could leave fossil fuels in the ground instead of burned in smoldering piles in the woods and emitting smoke and particulate matter and greenhouse gases that affect our communities. So that's sort of in eastern Oregon, where we're working in a restoration forestry framework, that's the carbon balance. So if we were able to build markets for this biomass material and it can, you know, create a suck to get it out of the woods, we can save hundreds of dollars per acre on these restoration treatments, and that will allow us to treat many more acres and gain all those benefits: safer communities, more ecologically healthy and resilient forests, and more jobs. In Central Oregon, we've explored many potential biomass markets, and we've discovered that using biomass as a fuel for space and water heating in large public buildings is not only very economically feasible, but it is also one of the only potential biomass markets that is really viable at this point in time. So by classifying woody biomass as an eligible green energy technology for the state's 1.5% requirement, the legislature can really help us solve our forest health problems and create new green energy jobs in our forested communities and provide a range of other community benefits. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, I encourage you to keep it short because we've only got a couple minutes and we're going to lose a member, and we would like to take action on this bill today. So,
Chairman, committee, my name is Brad Morrison. I live in Marion County. I work with Oregon Citizens Lobby, and we analyzed this bill and gave it a thumbs up. I was a little taken aback when I found out that it was pretty much deleted except for the amendments, but looking at the amendments, we like the amendments about including woody biomass as part of your synopsis here. As a carpenter of 25 years, journeyman carpenter, I've been involved in a number of large-scale projects that had to be LEED certified. Personally, I'm not a big fan of green technology for the most part. It's, in my opinion, cost ineffective, and it doesn't actually work for the most part that I've personally experienced. However, that being said, it's something we have to live with at this point, and I think the inclusion of woody biomass as part of the scope of what you're considering green technology is a very sharp step in the right direction. I personally heat with a wood stove, pellet stove rather, and find it to be an extremely efficient method for heating, and I'd recommend it to anybody as a way to cut their fuel bill. So with that, I'm tentatively in favor of your bill.
Thank you very much.
Quick question, because I know you're in a big hurry.
Well, we have a member that's going to leave us, and
okay.
We want to vote on this.
One question.
You want the bill?
You want the bill or the question?
All right, go with the bill.
Thanks. And there's one other person that would like to speak, so we'll get him a few minutes, and then we're going to... Thank you. That's
cut to the chase.
Who did you want to talk to after the question?
I'll talk to Mr. Chang.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. And I'm not here necessarily to speak for or against, but to express a note of caution. As somebody who's worked with this issue since 2007 when it was passed as part of the larger renewable portfolio standard bill, we made some changes, and it was done for specific reasons as part of the overall package on renewable energy for the session and to treat solar in a particular way. That's not to say we can't be flexible. In 2009, we adjusted the RPS to account better for biomass, particularly historical biomass. In 2012, my worry is that we had a great idea about geothermal, and a bill passed, and we took it into rulemaking and found that we had some real problems with it and had to come back last year and fix it. And I think a lot of it was because, the short session, that's part of the issue of the short session. And so biomass absolutely is renewable. It's acknowledged renewable. I guess there's just things to do and sort of policy trade-offs to talk about in terms of one industry or another. There's no representative from the solar industry here to kind of talk about potential impacts and that sort of thing. So again, just a note of caution: if the committee wants to, move the bill due to the short nature of its calendar, we can take up some of that discussion over on the other side.
Thank you for that. And I really do appreciate that testimony. Any questions? Because I think that from my perspective, I think it's definitely a consideration has to be done. I hope that in the Senate over there, that if there are people who have concerns, they will come and talk to us about that. I think with humidity biomass, we're talking mostly about heating, and solar can do, there are other options. So I hope there's a place for both of them, because and all three with geothermal. But I appreciate very much your testimony. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1578, and I'm going to open a work session on 1578. Senator Gershiger.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -4 amendments dated 2/11/14.
Senator Gershiger moves to adopt the -4 amendments dated 2/11/14. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? Also seeing none, they are adopted. Senator Bettsiger.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 1578 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that a subsequent referral to the Committee on Finance and Revenue be rescinded.
Okay. Do you see any reason to?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Just want to check to make sure.
Thank you.
With our experts.
We should have asked that first.
I know. Senator Bettsiger moves Senate Bill 1578 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Finance and Revenue be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition? Also seeing none, it is passed. Senator Canope, do you want to carry this bill? We will let you carry it. With that, we're going to open our reset. And members, if you feel like you need to leave, don't hesitate. I did promise that we had a few people who have not testified on Senate Bill 1575. So I'm going to reopen the public hearing on 1575. And if these people are here, I would love to hear from them. So they are John. Oh, we got John. We got that one. Is that right? Tom Darton. There's another page, I thought. Okay. Oh, and Kathleen Barnes-Burke. If they're here, we will take their testimony on the other bill.
So far apart on that, but they make it sound.
I don't see any. Is there anybody else that would like to testify? Oh, there we go. Yes, John. Thank you.
In fact, I've got on the record of saying.
I'm sorry about the way it happened.
Oh, that's fine. I had a chance to come in and talk to you last week.
Okay, very good.
Chairman Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Tom Parton, and I've had the privilege of testifying before this committee before on the need to better manage our federal forests, create jobs, industry jobs, and get employment back in rural Oregon. But today I'm going to testify in opposition of SB 1575, which in my opinion is disguised as an economic bill, but is nothing more than a bill to allow a log home company to illegally locate and operate in residential areas. I know how this process should work. As I said, I've worked to get jobs created in rural Oregon. In fact, in 1983, Mr. Doc Savage's company, I went over on their behalf and helped set up a mill in John Day, Oregon. We went through the proper planning process. I went around and talked to all the neighbors. We got the proper permits before we built, and we went ahead and we created a mill over there that employs a lot of people right now and is continuing to operate. This is not the case with this business. It showed up. If you look at the map on the back of my testimony, you'll see that this operation is just directly across the road from a series of homes that are built right along the Sandy River. On one side of our cabin, you can open up and see the beautiful river. On the other side, you open your door and you see this operation. And it's very noisy. Front-end loader operator makes a lot of noise, so do chainsaws. So it has created a lot of turmoil in that community. Our industry as a whole prides itself on following strong forest practices and land use rules that not only protect the forest, but also the water, wildlife, and other amenities. However, we do not need to improve our rural economy by trumping Oregon's land use laws, which I think are very good right now. As was pointed out, Mr. Fritsch is located there. He didn't get the permit. He lost at the Planning Commission level, lost at LUBA. We just finished up 2 weeks ago at the Court of Appeals. He lost that decision as well. So in absence of a judicial victory, he's seeking a legislative victory. And I'll tell you, that's going to create a lot of hardship for the folks that live out there along that river, and we just don't support it. Again, my family owns 5 of the 23 lots that were set up in 1945. My wife's grandfather set those up in conjunction with another gentleman. And you can just imagine, after 60 years of going out there and visiting our cabin, staying out there, we show up one day and here's a log home factory starting to set up camp. And as Mr. Fritsch mentioned, he lost his ability to manage and produce where he was at one location and moved to another, didn't get the right permits, didn't go through the formal process, and now it's supposed to be okay by getting some kind of legislation, and we just can't really agree to that. I do want to point out on the second page of my testimony, there's an OFRI report that shows log home building as secondary manufacturing, and secondary manufacturing is not a permitted use on that land right now, nor do I think it should be in the future. And we've got to be very cautious of that, because log home building, what your 1575 calls for is also setting up the ability to chip logs, chipping. And if you've ever been beside a log chipper running a 500 horsepower motor, diesel motor running and chipping logs, I would really not want that set up across the road from our house. So the bill has got some things in it that I think you really need to investigate and really need to look at hard, because I think, trying to passing legislation to solve a single individual's concern with a law or regulations really isn't in the best interest of this committee, and I'd really strongly encourage you not to have 1575 go any further. But I do appreciate you taking my time. There's been a lot of good testimony on it on both sides of it. I think if it was done right, it could have been okay. I guess my final thing, this is an issue of the right business in the wrong location. And we don't have a problem with Mr. Fritsch's business. It's a good business. It hires people. It keeps rural Oregon going. We need it, but we don't need it where it's located. So thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 1575? Okay. Then we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 1575. And we're not going to have a work session, but we are going to try to get a work group to try to figure out if there's a way to craft some definitions that are non-existent currently with regard to that. So if you're interested in that, get a hold of Beth at Community Services, and we'll start something. We'll figure that out as soon. We might even be able to have a little bit happening at the end of the session if there's not a lot of time moving, and then move it through so that we can look to see if we could have something by the beginning of the session coming up. So with that, I appreciate all you staying around and the work that everybody has done on our committee. We're half done, theoretically. So with that, we're going to get everything else done.
Yeah, we did.
We're going to close the Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development. Thank you very much.